We now have a new challenge, perhaps the most monumental in recorded history. The opportunity to investigate a phenomenon that could change our destiny. A look at ourselves 1,000 years in the future.
We're going to examine and perhaps question some widely held theories of what may have happened to this Earth of ours. We're going to investigate some strange and bizarre events in the present. Unbelievable happenings as fresh as today's headlines. And more important, perhaps, we're going to take a searching and scientific look into the future. We're reaching more and more out into space. Perhaps, as we may learn, someone, something, somewhere in space is reaching out to us.
Who the visitors are, where they're from, and what they want is unknown.
Bigfoot was attracting national attention and was now rapidly becoming the most intriguing mystery on the North American continent.
Many people have seen ghosts and reported incredible experiences from the realm of the spirit world. Who can tell what this young man will see as he falls deep into a trance?
Welcome to After Dark Radio with your host, Brian Alvarez.
All right, everybody. It is After Dark Radio. Brian Alvarez here. Dark Matter Radio Network. Friday night. Here live every Friday night, 11 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 2 a.m. Eastern. A lot of stuff to get into here tonight. We got a fun show. Nicholas De Leon is going to be our guest here tonight. About every 3 months, I have Nicholas on the show. He works for Circa, which is an app for your smartphone. And it is a news app. If you're somebody who loves the news, but maybe reading the, I guess nobody reads newspapers anymore. Maybe your subscription to the New York Times is largely going unused, or the Wall Street Journal, or your local Seattle Times, or whatever you read. Maybe it's unused, because obviously there's a lot of stuff to read there in the newspaper. Circa takes all of the news and breaks it up into the most important stories, breaks each story down into bite-sized nuggets for you to read. It is a great way to, I guess, keep updated with what's going on in the world in a very simple way on your smartphone. He is the technology editor at Circa. If you are on, if you've got the Circa app and you read anything in there about cutting-edge technology, guess what? Probably written by Nicholas De Leon. He's one of my favorite guests. We have him on about every 3 months. For those of you that have kind of kept track of technology over the years, things change quick. And so every 3 months is a pretty good schedule to get him on here. Always got interesting things to talk about. There is a big Apple event coming up. A lot of rumors about what's going to be announced there. A lot of people talking about maybe we'll be getting an iWatch or something like that. So we're going to talk to him about that, as well as a lot of other things. The new 4K televisions. We'll talk about self-driving cars. Got a lot of questions for Nicholas De Leon. Not just about cool gadgets, but maybe some things that in the future, you, the listener, will find these things to be indispensable. These things could change the world. So we'll be talking about that here tonight with Nicholas De Leon later on in the program. Until then, we got a lot of stuff here. As always, I've got a lot of different news articles to read here tonight, and we will be opening up the phone lines to you, the listeners. I want to direct you all to the After Dark Radio Show website. It's pretty easy to remember. It's AfterDarkRadioShow.com. What could be easier? The After Dark Radio Show is up at AfterDarkRadioShow.com. And if you head up there, you can get all of the information about this program. If you're listening for the first time, or perhaps you're listening to a replay on Saturday and you want to know more about the program, if you head up to AfterDarkRadioShow.com, the time, 11 p.m. Pacific, 2 a.m. Eastern, right there at the top, you'll never forget it. A link to the Dark Matter Radio Network where you can listen to this and all of the other shows that we provide here on the Dark Matter Radio Network. A link to our Facebook page. My buddy Andrew does a phenomenal job updating the Facebook page. In fact, I've not gone up there lately to check out how many followers we have gotten. Looks like we are at 2,397. It was under 500 several months ago. I really did not put a lot into the Facebook page, I won't lie. And Andrew approached me and said, hey, I'd love to help out here. And I said, sure. And the next thing you know, we had 1,000 and then 2,000. So we've settled in here, 2,400 about. If you'd like to follow us on Facebook, it is facebook.com/AfterDarkRadioShow. You will get brand new articles on your news feed every single day. Links to past shows. There's a lot of great stuff up there. That is facebook.com/AfterDarkRadioShow. That is available up there on the website as well. Plus the phone numbers. If you would like to contact the show tonight, very easy to do. We have got three numbers here for this program here tonight. We've got the toll-free number, which is 855-478-4478. That is 855-478-4478, toll-free in the United States and Canada. We've got west of the Rockies and east of the Rockies as well, hearkening back to the days of Art Bell. West of the Rockies line, 425-488-0525. That is 425-488-0525. East of the Rockies, you can call 425-482-1686. That is 425-482-1686. All of these numbers, again, are up at AfterDarkRadioShow.com. Also, our email address is up there, Brian@WrestlingObserver.com. Email me with anything you've got on your mind. You can put After Dark in the subject line to make sure it gets to me, and we will read as many of those as we can on the program here tonight. Also, I should add, if you think that you would be a great guest on this program, the information about contacting our producer, Gareth, is up there as well. Just right there on the front page. Guest booking, contact producer Gareth. It's right up there. Drop him an email, and maybe we'll get you as a guest here on this program. So, as of right now, if you are listening, anything on your mind, I'll be going over a lot of the news here. If you want to comment on any of it, if you'd like to comment on anything we've been talking about over the last several weeks, had a lot of interesting shows. We didn't actually interview anybody about the 11/11 phenomenon that is coming up, but we did talk about it last week. So if you've got any comments on that, we had a string there of shows on mysterious disappearances. We've got a lot of interesting shows in the past. If you'd like to comment on any of those, you may call in as well. Very happy to note that in the next couple of weeks, we are going to get Lauren Coleman here on the show. He has got a lot of stuff to talk about involving mysterious creatures, Bigfoot, Yeti, all sorts of interesting things. He's going to be on the program. So if you'd like to talk about that, you're welcome to do that as well. All phone lines are open right now. So give us a call with whatever is on your mind. Until then, we've got some news to get into before we get Nicholas here on the program today. One of them, very interesting. I guess this is a quite the technological advancement, but we have done shows in the past about actually very recently we did a show on life after death, and this is not really life after death, but the idea of telepathically communicating with another person. This from the Daily Mail in the UK. Could we soon send emails telepathically? Scientists have transmitted a message into the mind of a colleague 5,000 miles away using only brain waves. It says here that brainwave sensing machines have been used to telepathically control everything from real-life helicopters to characters in a computer game. These, of course, being, you know, they'll put an implant in somebody's mind, in someone's brain, and the implant will be used to control various things, including, I think we're now being able to control prosthetic hands using a chip implanted in the brain. So that, of course, is very interesting. The technology has now gone a step further. It has allowed somebody in India to send an email to a colleague in France using nothing but the power of his mind. Now, the researchers used electroencephalography headsets to record electrical activity from neurons firing in the brain and convert the words hola and ciao into binary. In EEG, electrical currents in the brain are linked with different thoughts that are then fed to a computer interface. This computer analyzes the signal and controls an action. In the latest study, researchers decided to replace the computer interface with another brain to receive the signals. In the initial test, the greeting was sent from a volunteer in India to a volunteer in France. There, a computer translated the message and then used electrical stimulation to implant it into the receiver's mind. The message appeared as flashes of light in the corner of their vision. And there is a there's a rather interesting, there's a photograph here, is what it is. One guy is looking at a computer screen, and it actually looks like he's playing Pong. I don't know what's going on in this, actually. But he's got a headset on, and he is apparently thinking of a word, I guess, hola, and it is being transmitted in binary through the internet to the receiver, who is wearing a device. It looks like he's hooked up to like a dentist chair. It's a very complicated looking contraption here. And he apparently is seeing the message in the corner of his vision. He is wearing a what my grandmother calls an eye pad. It is one of those sleeping pads that you put over your eyes. And that's apparently how he's receiving the message. So pretty fascinating, experiment being done here. It could change a lot of things for a lot of people. Talk more about that in a moment. To the phones, you are on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from?
Brandon from Los Angeles.
Brandon, what's up?
How's it going, Brian?
I'm doing great.
So I haven't actually heard you talk at all about the underwater thing that it is in Malibu, California. I was wondering because, Whitney must be interested, right?
Maybe not so much. She's more interested in marine wildlife.
There is whaling there, right?
There are whales there, yes. There are whales.
So,
Tell me more about this.
Would it not be a thing to actually have her on the show?
I could ask her about it. I usually try to scoop her on stories like this, and she's like, oh, I heard that weeks ago. She's like Dave when it comes to marine wildlife. Well, tell me more about this. What's going on?
Well, literally, you know that there is an underground base, obviously, that you can see it when you look up on the radar, that is in in Malibu, California, underwater. So I was asking you about it. That's why I wanted to know what you were going to say.
I don't really know a lot about it, to be honest with you. I can investigate more. I mean, the more you can tell me about it, the better.
Okay. Well, I don't know that much about it. That's why I'm asking you, Brian.
Well, you're asking the wrong guy at the moment. Is this Fresno or is this, you mentioned Malibu.
Malibu, yes.
Okay, I've seen something here about an underground base in Fresno, but I was
Fresno, there'd be no way. I mean, that would be in the desert.
Well, I think that's what they're saying. I think they're saying it's underground in the desert. So you're saying this is underwater in Malibu?
Yes, underwater.
All right, I'm actually looking
correct.
At some...
And it's all over the, it's all over, Dark Matter. So, you should know about this, Brian.
Hey, I'm behind the loop. I'm behind the loop, but you've brought me up to speed. So I'm going to look at this, and then I will comment on it here in a bit. How about that?
All right. No problem, Brian.
All right.
And much love to you and Vinny.
All right. Thanks so much for the call. Man, all over Dark Matter, and I'm behind. I'm behind here. Man. All right. So I've Googled this, and here are some... here are some photographs, some underwater photos, and that does in fact look like some sort of structure right there. I am going to leave this page open, and when we do our, jimmychurchradio.com has all the information. I have been alerted. So, hey everybody, I'm behind the times, but I'll have to check this out. Now, looks like there's a lot of articles here, including on the Huffington Post. The truth behind the Malibu underwater alien base. Oh, how about that? They plugged Jimmy's show here. Now, I must read this. It says here, a little more than 6 miles off the coast of Point Doom in Malibu. That's D-U-M-E, not D-O-O-M. An unusual-looking structure sits on the seabed floor based on images obtained on Google Earth. The oval-shaped object has a huge flat top and what appears to be pillars or columns that seem to reveal the entrance to a darker inner place. The anomaly is approximately 2,000 feet below the surface of the water, measuring nearly 3 miles wide. What exactly is this thing, it says? According to the website of a California-based radio program, Fade to Black, this may be the holy grail of UFO, USO, unidentified submerged objects that researchers have been looking for the last 40 years. And there is a video here from Jimmy Church's show. It says Jimmy Church, who hosts Fade to Black on the Dark Matter Radio Network, told the Huffington Post that one of his listeners, someone named Maxwell, no last name apparently, contacted him last month with a Google Earth image showing something odd underwater off the coast of Malibu. Church then asked graphic designer Dale Romero to capture as many angled images of the anomaly as he could. I needed him to find a way to get it under and above the water. My first impression was that it was Greek, said Jimmy. It looked artificial and did not look natural. When we are looking at it from above, it is a nearly perfect oval shape. In the natural surroundings, nothing is symmetrical. Everything is eroded, covered in rocks, sloping and peaking. And right here for 2 miles, it is a perfect oval with a black separation or outline to it. He says it is not unlike a domed stadium or a covered indoor racetrack or an Olympic arena. It has got that feel to it. Looks like a perfect oval man-made structure sitting on a construction site. If you are using Google Earth and you are listening to this right now, 34 degrees north, 118 degrees. All the coordinates are here. It's too many numbers. I'm not a number guy. But you can check it out by just going to Huffington Post or Google Malibu Underwater Alien Base, and this will come right up here for you. So head up there and check it out. They do interview someone from the U.S. Geological Survey who believes it is natural and it is part of the continental shelf. It is just a complicated part of what's now offshore. It has seen some erosion, maybe slumping, etc. So he believes that this is a natural phenomenon. What do you think? To the phones, you are on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from?
Hi, Sammy from New Jersey.
What's up, Sammy?
I just decided to stay up tonight to listen because I'm a big into technology and a lot of the stuff that guys are going to be talking about. So I'm interested to hear what he has to say about a lot of it.
It's your lucky day?
Hopefully. I wanted to ask your thoughts on something. This is one of those like universe world type things where a lot of people, including myself, try to look at life logically. And there's always theories about the beginning of the world and the end of the world in both religion and theory of evolution. And you always think about what really can be the beginning if you look at things logically, because you're always going to ask yourself, where did that come from? In the Islamic religion, I've been told you're not allowed to ask where God came from because you have that never-ending question, where did he come from, et cetera, et cetera. I wanted to know if you had any thoughts on the idea that existence in itself cannot be logical because there's no beginning by definition.
Because there's no beginning by definition?
Well, if you say that the beginning of time came from something that you label A, then you still have to ask the question, where did A come from? And it's like an infinite question of it has to come from something if you look at things logically.
Well, it could be. Let's say that you believe in God.
Right.
You could argue that God created time. And time has, there's a beginning and there is an end. That is part of what we see as time. But
where did God come from?
But you're missing the point. God invented time. God exists outside of time. There is no time. He's always been there. Will always be there. That would be the argument that he created something for us. For example, how could I make an analogy here? Let's say that you, Sammy, were an amazing programmer and you created a computer program, and you programmed it in such a way that all of the, let's say that you created sort of a sim game. When I was a kid, it was like Sim City. I'm not into video games now, so I don't know what it would be, but
I played it.
Okay, you create a Sim City. And you create it in such a way that you are able to program all of these little beings to believe that they are alive. But they have absolutely no understanding of the fact that they're in a game. They have no understanding of the idea that that there is a Sammy. Maybe they come up with these theories later, but they have no understanding of any of that. So all of the rules that you create in this game, whatever they might be, maybe the rules are, I don't know, you can walk on the ceiling or whatever they might be. Whatever you've created, that's something that you have created for that game. That's all they understand. They have no understanding of your world that you live in. They can't understand it because you have created the rules. So what I'm saying here is that that would be the argument, that this time, we're looking at time as something that must relate to everything. But in reality, time would be something that only we experience because it has been created for us.
Well, I get that the way that I'm understanding what you're saying is that, and this is, you know, in a way I feel this way, is that whatever, you know, created us or, you know, wherever we came from, like we're not, it's not possible for our minds to comprehend it, basically.
Essentially,
that,
yes.
That the rules of our society. Okay. Well, yeah, that's kind of what it is. Like, I guess when we live on Earth or live as humans, we think of, you know, not that necessarily we know everything, but we understand how things work. And probably in reality, we literally know zero.
Well, I don't know. I don't think that we know zero. Whatever's out there, I think that we've learned a lot about the universe and the way that things work. And I think that we're learning, I mean, obviously we're learning new things every day. I mean, a thousand years ago, the idea that we would ever be able to virtually pinpoint the exact age of the universe, I mean, 100 years ago, I mean, this would be preposterous. But every day we find a way to pinpoint more and more. We can look further back toward the beginning of the universe. Maybe someday, I don't know how, but if it were 100 years ago, I still don't have any idea how they've determined the age of the universe, but they have. 100 years from now, who knows what we will have been able to determine is in regards to the workings of the universe. Maybe we won't know everything, but I think that we can know a lot. We know a lot right now, and I think there's a lot more that we can learn, but we may not know everything.
I'm sure we know a lot less than we could, I guess.
I'm sure we do. I think the story of history is people always seem to think they know more than they really do.
That is, I think 75% of the people, if they know more than 75% of the other people, is that one of the expressions I've heard about that.
Sure, yeah.
I look forward to hearing about the tech, and all I can say is I hope you become an Android boy one day soon.
You hope I do become an Android?
I hope you become an Android guy.
All right, great. I do too. As I get older, I hope that they just start rebuilding me one body part at a time, like Darth Vader.
I was talking about smartphones and tablets.
Come on now.
By 10 years from now, it'll be some company we never heard of that has some mind smartphone.
That's right. So the Android phone, I see. I thought you were going to turn me into an Android.
Oh, no.
All right.
No, we can't replace you on this site. There's no one better.
Oh, yeah. Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Yeah, have a good day.
All right. Thanks so much for the call. Android phone. Come on. Don't even get me started on all of my Mac devices I've got in this house. My iPhone, my MacBook Air, my iMac, all synced together. It's great. It's fabulous, I would go as far as to say. What have we got here on the... I forgot to mention, you can contact me on Twitter. I am at Brian Alvarez, if you want to contact me there. Let's go to the phones. You are on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from?
It's Matthew Gibson calling from Hamilton, Ontario.
What's up, Matthew?
First time caller, long time subscriber, long time fan of Mr. Alvarez himself.
Well, thank you very much for calling.
So I sit here in a hospital bed, bored, and thought I would call for the first time. And after listening to you for many years, and I also heard last week that you actually turned somebody on to Art Bell, and you did the same for me, so I would like to thank you for that.
Really? Wow, that's two now.
Yeah, yeah. You're representing him very well.
Well, thank you.
I enjoy every single Friday night. I look forward to it a lot. And I really don't have much to say, to be honest. I know you're talking technology. I just tuned in. I just wanted to give you a big pat on the back and thank you for the endless entertainment that comes from After Dark and from, of course, you know, your other little gig. Your other little wrestling shenanigans.
They are shenanigans, let me tell you. Are you doing okay?
I'm doing better. I've had quite the setback the last year or so. It's a lifelong illness that I battle.
Yeah.
And this setback of mine has really done me in pretty good to the point where I needed a extended hospital stay. But with people like you to listen to, it helps me get through it. So I'm basically calling to thank you. And my only other comment would be, since you are talking technology, I'm not sure, I just tuned in, so I'm not sure how far you are into the program or what the topics are at hand. But if you have anybody on that can talk medical technology, you know, upcoming, you know, on a show, that would be really interesting because I've been dealing with medical stuff since I was born, and I'm 23 now, and I see the advancements. And I don't think the rest of the world really pays attention to the medical advancements if they're not kind of right in front of them. So it would be really interesting to hear from somebody that could explain kind of where we're headed with medicine, basically.
Well,
somebody like me has, I'm missing all of my small intestine. I have a foot and a half instead of 25 feet.
Wow.
So they are working on, they've been working on for years on like synthetic organs, right? And basically, since transplants are so incredibly dangerous, and I've been against them for my entire life, I'm looking forward to seeing what they do with like growing organs from specific DNA rather than taking somebody else's organ and transplanting it. So what I'm hearing is they're able to you know, take a sample of, let's say, what I have, which is my real DNA, and then grow a healthy bowel on its own and then give it to me that way.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. So that would be really cool if you ever had a, some type of medical technology guy in to talk. I'm not sure how many people would be interested in that, but I know I certainly would be. So that's that.
Well, yeah, we did the, I pre-taped the show with Nicholas, but I know that Garrett, the producer, is listening right now, so I will get him on that, because I've been very interested in it, not so much particularly what you've been talking about, but I, one of my wife's friends that she went to school with was involved in a horse riding accident and ended up paralyzed. And I've talked on the show about Christopher Reeves a million times, but I was convinced that Superman would walk again. I just thought for sure that the way that things were changing, I'm an optimist. I thought that, okay, you know, we don't have an answer now, but as things go by, you know, just like I was talking about the implant earlier in the show, implant that controls limbs. So I've always been fascinated with that stuff, but I will put a show together for you and we'll talk about that at some point.
Yeah, that would be great. That would be really fascinating. Absolutely.
Well, I want to thank you so much for the call, and I want to wish you the best, and keep in touch.
Absolutely. And yep, thanks again for everything.
All right.
Thanks for everything you do. You're awesome.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate that, and hope things go well for you. With that said, everybody, let's talk some tech. Let's talk some cutting-edge technology. This is not just cool stuff. I have asked many times in the past about, you know, are we going to have a wraparound TV set soon? But some of the stuff that we're going to talk about here today is stuff that could change the world. Technology, there are a lot of great things. And sometimes there are fun things, like your smartphone. Smartphones, iPhones. I mean, these have changed the world. Sometimes, maybe, some would argue not for the best. I've got an article here about concerns. In fact, I'll read this after Nicholas is off, but, this from medicalexpress.com, cell phone addiction, an increasingly realistic possibility, a study finds. So, maybe there are some concerns, but in general, technology usually, I feel, leads to real advances in the world. So I love talking about it. And we're going to talk about that here tonight with Nicholas. So stand by, everybody. We'll be back in just a moment with Nicholas De Leon of Circa, talking cutting-edge technology here on After Dark Radio, Dark Matter Radio Network. On After Dark Radio, Brian Alvarez here, After Dark Radio Show here on the Dark Matter Radio Network, joined today by one of my favorite regular guests, Nicholas De Leon, is on the show today of Circa, and we're going to be talking technology here today. Nicholas, what's going on?
I'm doing very well, just had a little bit of a phone difficulty a few minutes ago, but everything's looking good right now, so pleasure to be here, and thanks for having me.
It was funny. We're here to do a show on tech, and I called, and your tech wasn't working.
It literally went out not 10 seconds before you called. So I don't know if that's an ominous sign for today, but I think we'll get through it.
Now you're using Google Voice, is that correct?
Yes. Yeah.
Now tell everybody who doesn't understand Google Voice what it is, because your call quality is great.
It's. The closest thing to it is Skype. It's basically a voice over IP service that you use instead of, you know, because obviously cell phones don't sound the best regular cell service. So I typically use Google Voice, and I can connect it to all my cell phones, because at Circa, I need to know all the latest stuff. So I've got a bunch of phones here, and when I give people a certain phone number, all the phones ring. So no matter where I am or what room I'm in, I should have a phone that's ringing. So it's basically like a slightly improved version of Skype is the best way I could say it. And it's always reliable, and I've never had any problems with it. So, check it out if you're not familiar with it.
So have you got a traditional cell phone carrier as well? Or...
I do, yeah. I do have T-Mobile. It's a normal T-Mobile account. But I will say I just moved into an apartment about 5 months ago, and I don't believe I actually have a traditional phone line in here. If I do, it must be tucked away under one of the circuit breakers or whatever, because I've looked around and I definitely do not see a traditional phone jack. So I guess the times are changing.
Man, there's not even a jack in there?
I've never seen it. If there is, I must have missed it, because I've looked high and low. And I've never seen one. So
devastating for me as somebody that does a radio show. I miss
it's even as listeners to podcasts would know, like, you could just someone when you just speaking to someone with an old school landline, it's like talking to someone like, wow, I can't believe phones sounded so good so many years ago compared to what people are used to today with their average cell phone connection. So yeah, it's a shame.
Yeah, you can remember. I don't know. How old are you, Nicholas?
I'm 28. I'm 28.
Oh, man. So you're too young. Maybe. I don't know. But when I was a kid, there used to be all of those phone commercials. And the big selling point was you can hear a pin drop over our phone line. And nowadays, I mean, a bomb could probably go off within 60 feet of you, and I may not be able to hear it on that cell phone. So It's sad. Sad. It's drop in quality.
It is, but I know the wireless carriers, they're not just sort of like standing still. I know Verizon a couple of days ago said they're going to be launching something called Voice over LTE in the next couple of weeks. And that's the gist of that is that it should dramatically improve phone call quality on phones that are compatible with the service and in areas where they've sort of flipped that switch. So as bad as sort of people are used to cell phone conversations sounding, it's actually it's going to start getting better soon. How long it takes to get to to your neck of the woods, I say, but they're working on it, and it one day it will be a little better. So keep hanging in there.
Well, I've got a codec here, which was not cheap, and so I've hooked up some of the regulars. There's an app that they can use, also not cheap, but I could get very, very, very good audio quality over a cell phone line. I don't know if you've heard any of the shows of late with like Dave or Dr. Luchas.
Of course, yeah,
been
yeah.
using it. Yeah, but I mean, the quality is good. The problem is I get a delay sometimes. I don't like the delay, and it's expensive. So I guess my question is, I've heard people talking about this this HD voice. I'm not sure what you know about it, what kind of quality we're going to get with it, if it's similar to the voice over LTE that you're just talking about, or what.
Yeah, those are two different. One's a brand name, and one's just sort of like the underlying technology name. So those are effectively the same thing. And yeah, every I've never actually heard it in person myself, but every review and every sort of like description of the service I've heard, they've all praised it and said it's night and day. So that's coming, and that'll help basically.
Sure. But I mean, for the purposes of doing a show, I mean, somehow I would have to be utilizing, which I can, by the way, utilizing my cell phone to call people on their cell phones. But if we both had the voice over LTE or whatever, I could drastically improve the quality here.
You could. I don't know how you'd be able to record that for the shows. I don't know your particular setup. But yeah, just you talking to Dave would be, theoretically would sound much, much better.
Oh, there you go. Well, good news for everybody doing these kinds of shows. Now, the other thing I wanted to talk about is there's a Big Apple, there's a Big Apple, whatever they call it. There's a announcement coming up.
An event.
That's right. Yeah. There's an event coming up. And my wife is not really big into technology. I kind of force her into technology because if I didn't, she'd probably be less tech savvy than my 85-year-old grandmother. So I kind of force her into this stuff. But she's very, very interested in an iWatch. And there are rumors that something resembling an iWatch is going to be announced here at this event. What do you know about this?
Yes. The latest going around is that September 9th, so a couple of days from now, Apple will announce both the next generation iPhone, and there will likely be two models, one that's 4.7 inches and one that's 5.5 inches. The current iPhone is 4.0 inches, so it's a little bigger. But yeah, the iWatch, known as a wearable device, no one really knows the name, but they've been calling it iWatch since forever. And it's basically going to combine a bunch of different functions into one little handy wrist-worn, contraption. One of the big things that Apple announced at its developer event in June was something called sort of like a platform for health tracking and fitness equipment. So you can strap on, presumably you'd be able to strap on the device, the iWatch, let's call it, and be able to track your steps and be able to track calories burned. And then you can download third-party fitness apps to sort of like, oh, I'm trying to lose 10 pounds, and it'll track your steps throughout the day and give you feedback and say, hey, you need to walk, another mile or two today to reach your goal. And that's sort of one of the great hopes of the technology industry these days is getting people interested in these wearable devices, because more or less everyone, at least in sort of, the U.S. and developed markets, pretty much everyone has a smartphone. So there's not really a whole lot of growth there anymore. So what's next? Well, here are these wearable devices that they'll connect to your phone, and they'll give you all
all this sort of value-added information, and that's what they're hoping. That's what the latest rumors is, and we'll see come the ninth.
You know, the thing with the wearables is, when I think of Steve Jobs, he was a man of simplicity. He liked simple designs and
sure.
You know what I mean? And when I look at a lot of these mock-ups of potential iWatches, I look at them and it's like, would I ever really wear something this gaudy? What did you call it? A contraption? It's kind of what I think of when I see some of these things. It's like, would I really want to wear a contraption on? I would want something that was like, you know, I wanted to be simple and unobtrusive, and I'm just not quite sure if such a design really exists.
Right. No, the devices, a couple companies have come out with wearable devices, smartwatches. Samsung has come out with one. Motorola is coming out with one in a couple weeks. LG is coming out with one in a couple weeks. Been sort of okay.
Oh, man, here we were talking about call quality. You just dropped out there for a second. Go ahead.
Oh, geez. Anyhow, I was saying that a couple of companies have already sort of developed and released smartwatches. Samsung came out with one a little while ago, and Motorola's coming out with one soon, and LG's coming out with one soon. But the sort of the big takeaway here is that no one's really been sort of blown away by them so far. And so we're all sort of waiting. You know, Apple has a reputation of sort of, you know, here it is. Here's the thing you've all been waiting for. And you know, isn't this great? Everyone's just waiting, like, can Apple be the one? Does Apple have it in it to finally, you know, get this thing right? Because honestly, if they can't, it's very hard to see anyone else being able to sort of get it right. And so that's sort of where we are right now. But yeah, I agree with what you're saying. It needs to be sleek. It needs to sort of like blend in seamlessly. You don't want to walk around with some, you know, sort of gangly looking thing on your wrist. It's just kind of a weird idea. But if anyone could do it, it's Apple. So I think people are very cautiously optimistic about what they're going to release. And obviously Apple would not have spent all the time and money developing this thing if they didn't think they've sort of cracked the code, so to speak. So I'm cautiously optimistic. I'm personally not necessarily blown away by the idea of these wearable devices just yet, but that could just be because, you know, so far they've been all sort of a little bit underwhelming.
Sure.
So we'll see. Wait and see, I guess. I don't know.
And even those wearable fitness tracking things, I mean, you would know better than I, but I mean, I've been to like the Apple store and I see them, and when you first see it, it's like, hey, that thing's kind of cool. And then you sort of think about it for a while, and it's like, would I ever really wear that? Probably not. And I don't. I go to the gym, and I don't see virtually anybody ever wearing them. And it seems to me that they never really caught on. So the idea that Apple's thinking about doing something that has already been tried and failed, I don't know about that idea.
Right. Well, I mean, you would know. Fitness is a giant industry in this country. Everyone is trying to get into shape. Everyone is trying to stay in shape. So there's plenty of money on the table for the company that does get it right. But yeah, you're right. There's sort of like fitness, the Fitbits of the world. They have their niche and they have their fans. I've used a bunch of them. And, you know, they're neat, but I don't know that I would consider them vital to like my everyday life. Like, you know, smartphones, for example, that's pretty much at the point where you would consider them vital for your everyday life here in, you know, in a country like the U.S. But I don't know if these fitness back there yet, but that's sort of why everyone's sort of waiting back and see what can Apple do here to sort of, you know, tick all the boxes to make it, to, you know, get it over the line, so to speak. So yeah, I don't know. It's interesting times, to say the least.
You know, one thing that I saw about the potential the Apple announcement was the idea that this new iPhone may be NFC compatible, which is when you go to the store, you can kind of use it. You can use your phone to make a purchase. And the one thing, this is just me personally, I don't know how the rest of the world operates, but I want to get around with less. You know, I was always looking, what I always wanted was like an iPhone case where I could put all of my credit cards and everything and it would be unobtrusive. So instead of having to have a phone and a wallet, it would basically just be one piece. And I never liked any of them that I saw. They all just, they were too cheaply made, or you couldn't get enough cards in there, or whatever. But if I could someday only have a phone, I wouldn't need to carry a phone in a wallet. I could purchase stuff with my phone. I could have, like, my ID and everything would be digitally put on my phone. That, to me, is a selling point.
Right, yeah. The latest sort of word in the street is that the phone will have NFC, which is basically a short distance wireless technology, which basically you would take your phone and it has all your sort of, like, credit card data on it and so forth. And when you go to the store and, you know, you buy your whatever, rather than handing the person cash or even, you know, swiping your credit card, you would sort of, like, touch your phone to this new register, basically. You touch your phone to the register and the transaction goes and you know, and that's it. So it saves you, in your scenario, it saves you the trouble of having to carry out cash, having to carry around, you know, a bunch of different credit cards, because, yeah, nobody wants to carry around a wallet full of, people don't even want to carry a wallet if they can get away with it. So that it could potentially sort of solve that problem. I know that there are a couple startups, smaller companies, but they're looking at the idea of sort of credit cards that sort of combine multiple cards into one. Those are still sort of in the planning stages. There's a fairly well-known one called Coin, which was supposed to be released, I believe, this fall. It's now been pushed back to the spring. Everyone's sort of, like, looking around, maybe, like what's going on over there? What are they having troubles? That type of thing. But yeah, the idea of having a phone, it's sort of one like the smartwatch, like the wearable device. It's one of those ideas that's, like, it's just at the edge of, like, being there, but hasn't quite gotten there. I know Google, they made a big push with Google Wallet a couple years ago. I was at the big event where they announced it here in New York, and the idea was that you would similarly link your credit card and all your stuff to your Google account, and then you would take your compatible phone to the drugstore, what have you, and you would pay with your phone. That more or less died on the vine for a number of reasons. Wireless carriers didn't really support it. They had competing standards. It was only available on certain phones. NFC at the time, this was 2011, so a couple years ago. NFC at the time wasn't as widespread, and so you would sometimes go to a store, and they would all be set up to accept, you know, the phone payment, and the cash register person would look at you like, what are you doing, sir? You have to pay for this. No, I am paying for this. I'm using my phone. And it was just such a rarity that I have never seen anyone use it before. So again, one of those ideas that always, or at least for the past couple of years, almost there, but not quite. So again, it's one of those things that if Apple doesn't get this right, it's hard to see another company doing so. So another wait and see, I guess.
There are phones that have the NFC capability already. And I mean, maybe I'm just in the minority and wanting something like this, but I never see anybody using this at the store. I mean, I've been to many stores and they've got that thing. And I don't think I've ever in my whole life seen one single solitary person using it. So maybe I'm just one of the only ones that thinks it would be cool.
No, yeah, I haven't. There's a drugstore chain here in New York called Duane Reade. They were one of the first companies to sort of jump on board with the Google Wallet one a couple years ago. And I've never seen, I did it once. But I've never seen any other person use it. So yeah, not quite a widespread. One of the sort of counterpoints to that is that maybe for you it's useful, but maybe for the average person, it's not really any more useful to tap your phone to the register than it is to swipe your card and, you know, go on with your business. So again, it's one of those things. Is it necessarily vital for your sort of everyday? Well, no company has so far demonstrated that it is quite that vital. So who knows?
Do you think that with technology, since you just mentioned it, there are a lot of things that I think would be cool, but, you know, it's not vital that I use my phone to pay for something. But for a lot of people nowadays, you leave the house and you realize you left your phone at home. I mean, it doesn't matter if you're late to meet the president. You turn around, you go back and get your phone. For a lot of people, the phone has become vital. Now, in real life, trust me, your phone is not vital. But people have, now they feel it's vital, And so, as you noted, virtually everybody in the world has a smartphone. Is the key in building a new technology to try to convince the world that what you are providing for them is vital? Even if it isn't, you just try to convince them that they cannot live without this technology.
Well, sure. That certainly helps. I mean, I'll go on a tangent in a second here regarding the WWE network. But
yes.
If you can convince people that this is something that you need, and it's not just something that sort of enhances the quality of your life, it is something that you need to survive on a day-to-day basis. And like you said, there are definitely people who use their phone today in developed markets where it's like, yeah, that is their link to the world. They use it not just to, you know, make the occasional phone call. There's text messaging, there's banking, there's apps like Uber and Lyft where you need to call a ride to your next meeting or whatever. It's these little mini supercomputers in your hand, they're incredibly useful. And if they're not vital, they're definitely close to it. I definitely, you know, days when I don't walk out with my phone, you sort of get that sort of liberating, I'm not, you know, tethered to the world at this very second. I can, you know, sort of exist in my solitude, for a few moments. But yeah, just a quick aside, making something feel vital, perhaps that's one of the problems that WWE is having with its network. It's when they provide just so much free programming per week between Raw and SmackDown, does the average sort of casual fan need to pay $9.99 per month for the privilege of watching, you know, main event? I mean, obviously only a couple hundred thousand people feel that it's that vital. So if you can convince people that they need your thing, they need your new tech, then yeah, that's definitely a bonus.
we'll get into the network here in a second. I got one more credit card related question, and this just, I mean, I don't know if you know anything about this, but I went to Canada and I used my card everywhere and there was no swiping. They use the chip that is embedded in your credit card, and they've got these machines where you stick it into a slot and it reads the chip as opposed to sliding it. And I don't know what the benefit is. I don't know if there is a benefit. I don't know. I was kind of surprised that nowhere I went in Canada did I swipe that card. It was all completely different than how we do it in this country. And now that I've gone to Canada and come back, I see these machines everywhere that you would use the same way. It's the slot-based, chip-based version.
Right.
But they still make me slide it. And I don't know if they're like ahead of the game and we're behind or what the point of it is or what. But it was weird.
Yeah, those are called chip and pin credit cards. Those have been out in Europe for a little while, and they start. I actually got one a couple months ago, and basically the added benefit is they're significantly more secure than the credit cards that we're used to. I used one at a Walmart here about an hour north of New York, and yeah, you plug your card in and put your pin number. The idea is that if someone takes your card, only you actually know the PIN number to the card. So if you were to try to take the stolen card and either, you know, use it at another physical store or try to use it online, the card is sort of useless without.
Yeah, but I didn't use a PIN.
No, some registers are equipped to handle both, basically. It's up to the store whether they want to, how they want to handle it, basically.
But yeah, I see.
That's the sort of the ultimate idea with those cards.
Now, going back to the WWE network, for those of you listening to this who are not wrestling fans, the easiest way to understand what this network is it's very similar to MLB.TV, where what it is basically is a pro wrestling channel, essentially. It is, as they bill it, just like Netflix, but better, they say. Realistically, it's just like Netflix, except it's wrestling. They're trying to get this into millions of homes. They're at about 700,000 in this country. And I guess, you know, we don't even have to specifically concentrate on WWE, but as somebody who makes their living in technology, where are we here in 2014 in terms of adoption of platforms like this? Everybody always talks about cord cutting. You know, I canceled my cable. I get everything I need on Hulu and Netflix, and I've got my Apple TV or my Roku or whatever. How many people are realistically doing this? And are we looking at a situation where in 5 years, most people are doing this?
I would say no to that last point. I don't know if we'll ever get to a point where most people are dropping their cable subscription. It is a phenomenon, cord cutting, where people sort of, you know, cut their Comcast or cut their Time Warner to either save money, or they just don't watch enough cable, or between services like Netflix and Hulu and the WWE Network, they sort of feel that, well, I've got enough entertainment options via this this internet service. I don't necessarily need 500 channels that I never really watch anyway, and that costs me, you know, upwards of $100 per month. So it's a thing. It's not as widespread as maybe it may appear to be online, because you think you're online when you sort of talk to people about the benefits of platforms like Netflix and Hulu. It's sort of a bit of an echo chamber. You're talking to people who are tech savvy, and they don't understand why people, you know, don't just get with the program, so to speak. But it's a small thing. I think it'll remain a small thing. I think a lot of people, right now, just like the idea of sitting on the couch and watching what's on, or at most watching what they've DVR'd. They don't necessarily want to sit there and fiddle through, you know, the Roku box and try to get the app working, and then their internet goes down, and all these sort of things that, you know, when you come home from a hard day at work, you just want to chill out for an hour or two. That's not necessarily appealing, that you have to sit there and you know, go through all this high tech
rigmarole.
You just want to chill out.
Yes. Let me ask you this question. I'll try not to talk forever. This is kind of a little bit of a setup, but when I was a kid and I wanted and I'd listen to songs on the radio, if there was a song I really liked, I'd have to go buy the CD, you know, and maybe if I were lucky, I could get like I think they had singles on CD. I can't even remember. But the point of this is, eventually there was the rise of these file sharing sites, and Kazaa, or some of the other ones. I can't even remember their names.
There was Napster. There was Kazaa,
Napster.
There was iMesh.
Exactly.
That was sort of my computer introduction, those first services.
Sure.
I definitely know what you're talking about.
Okay. Now, maybe I'm out of my mind, but my feeling was that the reason that people started doing all of this file sharing was not because they wanted it for free, but rather because if there's one song you want, it is easier to just go grab the song you want off a file sharing site than pay the whole $14.99 for the CD. And it seems to me that when iTunes sprung up and all of a sudden you could buy one song for 99 cents. Obviously, there were a lot of reasons that places like Napster and Kazaa and everything like that went down. But it kind of seemed to me that people were willing to pay 99 cents. It wasn't about getting it for free. It was just right. They didn't want to spend $16 for a whole album. They weren't going to listen to a thing on the album except for the one song they wanted. So when you gave them the opportunity to just buy a song or two, they were okay with spending $2 to buy the song or two that they wanted. So my question to you is, if people continue to cut the cord, and if the number of people that cancel cable and move on to Netflix and Hulu and that sort of thing, if that number continues to rise, do you see a day where the Comcast and the Frontiers and all of these cable companies are open to the idea of doing a system kind of like iTunes, where they would say, instead of paying $150 for all of these stupid channels that you don't watch, just to get a couple of them that you want to see, you can pay $9 a month for USA, you can pay $3 a month for sci-fi, and you can basically create an a la carte cable package fit for you, where you don't have 500 channels you don't watch. You only have the channels that you do watch. That would be so convenient for me. I hate having to spend all of this money for all of these stupid channels just because I need FS1 to watch UFC. It's infuriating to me when I see my cable bill. Is this possible?
I think you are not alone in sort of feeling that. I don't know how soon that's going to be, because I think sort of, at least, you know, the television companies' arguments and the cable companies' arguments is that, yes, of course, it would be great if you could pay, you know, $10 and get, you know, you only want the Food Network, you only want HGTV, and you only want FS1. Here's, you know, here's $15 and keep all the rest of the channels. I think what they would say to that is that the way the cable sort of TV business in this country works is that it would just sort of destroy a lot of the smaller channels. So you may think that, oh, well, I just want to pay, you know, for FS1. That's like, okay, that's great. But the reason why FS1 exists is because Fox is able to bundle it with, you know, all their other channels. And so when they go to Comcast and say, here is, you know, the Fox bundle, and Fox gets money for that. And, you know, everyone sort of wins. It's you're basically subsidizing a lot of the less popular channels with the more popular channels. So I think it would take a complete sort of rejiggering of the way the TV business model works here in this country. And obviously, if you're Comcast or Time Warner Cable or whatever, you don't necessarily have any incentive to do that, because you're already making money hand over fist. And why bother? So, yes, of course, your customers, if you can get a couple more customers because they only want FS1, it's like, well, we're already making all this money anyway, so it's not really in our interest. Now, that being said, there are companies that are sort of trying to experiment with it. Intel last year said they were developing a system that would sort of it would be an a la carte system where you could online, you know, sort of like Netflix and Hulu, you could buy this channel, you could buy that channel, you know, one by one. What ended up happening was Verizon bought that, you know, the underlying technology to that.
Dang it. They screwed the whole thing up.
Sorry. I don't know where we were.
No, I'm just laughing at the idea that there was this idea and then Verizon bought it.
Yeah, no.
Classic.
Verizon bought it, and they're sort of sitting on it. They haven't really said what they intend to do with it. But there are companies, and Dish Network is the same thing. Dish Network is sort of quietly working on a system where they will let you sort of buy, you know, a la carte channels. They signed a couple deals with a couple of the television companies, but it's just one of those things where if you're a television executive, you know, the system works so well for you now, it's going to take something very, very powerful to sort of change you and change the way you think about the entire business. That's why sort of people clamor for HBO to, you know, just let me get HBO for $15 a month without, you know, either without realizing or without respecting the fact that HBO gets, you know, a lot of money on your cable system. And so, yes, of course, you know, you would love to get HBO for $15 a month, but then they'd be leaving a big chunk of change on the table as the system exists today.
Sure.
That's their argument. You know, I would love it. You know, I would love it if you wake up tomorrow and all of a sudden it's a la carte for everything. That would be great. But I don't know that how close exactly we are to that happening. So, you know, keep your fingers crossed, I guess.
So tell me how the Chromebook is doing of late. I'm a big I don't have one right now, but I'm a big fan of the idea of it. And if I didn't have to do this radio show, I have various programs to record and that sort of thing. I mean, I would give anything to live my life on a Chromebook, especially since Dropbox just increased the amount of storage by 10 times. You can get an entire terabit for $9.99 right now. I mean, a $9.99 subscription to Dropbox and a Chromebook, and you've virtually got it made nowadays.
Yeah, they're definitely coming into their own. The Chromebook, if anyone doesn't know, is sort of a laptop that doesn't have a hard drive. It needs to be connected to the internet, and it's basically just a very simple computer. It runs the Chrome web browser, and there's all the Gmail apps and the Google Drive and so forth. And it's just a great sort of simple computer. If you don't need, you know, an expensive laptop, if you don't need, you know, Windows, if you're not recording podcasts or if you're not editing video or playing a lot of video games and things like that, you just want a simple computer to browse your email, check Facebook, that type of thing. They're great little devices. And when they first came out, they were rather underpowered and kind of slow and kind of cruddy, but they've gotten much better of late. HP makes a couple good models. Google itself came out with the Pixel about this time last year, maybe a little bit earlier last year. That was like a super high-end model. They're doing very well in schools, from what I understand, because they're so cheap and you know, to sort of deploy them, and kids really can't, you can't really ruin it if it's just more or less just a web browser. You know, kids know how to use a web browser these days. Here you go. And, you know, and have at it. So they're great little machines. I've recommended them to actually a bunch of people, a bunch of colleagues as well. At Circa, all of our tools are, you know, we're not editing video. We're not, you know, we're not doing anything like that. They're online web tools. So for what we do for a living, it's perfect because you just have your web browser, a bunch of tabs open, and you do your work. So yeah, they're great and they're super cheap and they're getting better. So if anyone's interested, they're definitely okay to buy now. A couple years ago, I don't know if I would have said that, but I think you're okay to start looking in that direction today.
Like $250.
Yeah, they're ridiculous.
I mean, if you've got, I mean, like I said, I've got to do this show, so I need, and actually I just use GarageBand, so I could use any Mac, but all of my word processing, anything I write for the newsletter, anything I, spreadsheets for subscribers, I just use Google Drive, which is free. So literally virtually everything I need, I could use on a Chromebook in, I mean, I always remember back when I was a kid and something goes wrong with your computer and you're like completely screwed, or you get a new computer and it's like the biggest nightmare trying to transfer stuff over and everything like that. If you got a Chromebook and you live your life using all of these apps, I mean, that thing goes off a cliff. You get a new Chromebook and there's 0 minute setup. All your stuff is right there. It's great.
Yeah.
Ah, the future.
The power of the cloud.
That's right. The power of the cloud and the internet. I'm a big fan of the future. In fact, so tell me about this this deal with Tesla and all the patents.
That was a couple of weeks ago. That was basically Tesla. What they said was they've obviously, as they've developed their company, they've made a bunch of breakthroughs and they've developed new technology. And obviously, you patent all of that stuff. And normally, what's been happening amongst the big technology companies over the past couple of years is it's like, hey, we've got all these patents. You've infringed on our patents, so now we're going to sue you. And, you know, we would either like, A, you know, a couple million dollars, or B, we would like you to license the patent and give us a steady stream of revenue for, you know, for using that patent. So basically what Tesla has said is that in the interest of developing the sort of electric car market at large, rather than holding on to these patents and sort of using them as threats or as using them as to sort of like, sort of pull back the electric car industry, what they're saying is, nope, we've got these patents. If you infringe on them, we're not going to use them. They're sort of, they're free to use. We've developed all this technology and, you know, here you go. Everyone can benefit. The idea is that rather than using them to sort of make either short-term gains and win lawsuits and things like that, they would rather see the entire sort of electric car industry, you know, writ large grow rather than just line their pockets in the short term, which is very fairly altruistic. But Elon Musk has sort of got that, Elon Musk, the founder and CEO of Tesla, he's sort of got that like that engineer sort of like open spirit to him, which is sort of you don't necessarily see among the other bigger companies that engage in patent lawsuits. So yeah, that's a great development, and it's something that, you know,
It could be a world changer.
It could, of course. And I understand why companies wouldn't, you know, don't necessarily, you know, follow his path. But I know Twitter has made similar. They own a couple key mobile patents, and they've similarly said that rather than sort of use these patents as threats for lawsuits against, you know, up and coming app developers, they'll just say, look, they exist. We've got them, but we're not going to use them. We'd rather see, you know, the entire industry grow for the betterment of everyone. So that's what's happening there.
When I was young, I had all these cars that just like, you know, they would break down, have these cars for, it was just misery to me. So as I've gotten older, I've been leasing my cars, and my lease came up, and I went to the dealership, and there was a new Mazda 3. And I really like the Mazdas, and so I got the new Mazda 3, and it's got a whole bunch, it's got a tech package in it. and some of the stuff that it has. It's got the cruise control with the it shoots like a laser radar gimmick out the front. And so if you're driving behind somebody and you get too close, it slows you down, and then it will speed you back up when you get around the guy. So it's not like the old cruise control where you had to physically brake. Right. It will brake and speed up for you. So literally all you have to do is hold the wheel. It's an automatic. I'm not a big fan of automatics, but it was all that was available. And it has to be an automatic, I guess, to utilize all of this stuff. But as I've been driving this thing, I'm sort of a fan of it now. I was never really a fan of the idea of self-driving cars because I like the control. I like being able to control my own car. I don't like the idea that my car is driving itself and I've got little control over it. But the more I drive, the more convenient it is. You know, when I'm taking kind of a longer drive on the freeway, you just set that cruise control and you just got to steer. I'm becoming more of a fan of the idea of these self-driving cars. And I mean, where are we in terms of 15 years down the road, 20 years down the road? Are we all in these self-driving cars?
It's an interesting question. I know Google is, of course, continuing to develop its self-driving cars in California. They've done limited testing in the Mountain View area. That's where Google is based. But to my knowledge, there haven't been any sort of large-scale tests, sort of like certainly not on the open road and that type of thing. So I think there are so many different issues here at play. Like a lot of municipalities, a lot of governments are, you know, not scared is not the word, but when you sort of ask for permission to test a self-driving car, they may not necessarily have, you know, the protocols in place to what you have a what? How do we, what happens if you get into an accident? Who's covering the insurance? You know, there's a lot of red tape. It's a lot of regulatory things that have to be addressed and, you know, and then worked out for it to be a technology that we can all sort of appreciate. I think maybe in between technology where it gets people along the same lines is companies like Uber and Lyft, where you don't necessarily need to own a car. And the idea is that, well, with the push of a button, you can call a car to exactly where you are via GPS. And that's, it's not a self-driving car, but it gives you the same sort of freedom of having a car whenever you need it on demand without needing to own a car. So that may be sort of an intermediary sort of step between, you know, the Google car fleet where you just jump in and it takes you to work in the morning. So I think it'll be a while before that's a thing that we can all appreciate. But yeah, you're definitely not alone in saying that you like to drive the car, you like to feel in control of the car. And that's true, and that's a valid sort of opinion, but you know, how many people say that when they take an airplane to visit grandma for Thanksgiving? You know,
you're not flying the plane. You don't get to steer that thing. Just sit there.
You just sit there and relax, and you know, you enjoy a drink and you watch a little bit of TV. So I think it's just something that people will have to sort of get used to, and you know, maybe everyone won't get used to it. But that's sort of the thing about technology. It marches ever onward, and the younger folks will sort of get with it, and you know, and the older folks won't, and so be it. And that's great too. So.
Is it true that there have been no accidents involving self-driving cars, or maybe there's been like one or two, but the number is very, very low?
Yeah, to my knowledge, there have in fact been zero accidents involving self-driving cars, which you know, on the face of it is all the more reason to sort of, you know, spur development, because I mean, Lord knows how many accidents are there, you know, on any given day involving, you know, people. A lot, I would wager.
Here in Seattle, I one of the things when I read about self-driving cars is the idea that they will be able to perfectly space themselves out between each other. And when you've got a large number of cars on the road, a self-driving car is significantly better at maneuvering is not the word, but traffic, let's just put it this way. Traffic will move significantly faster with a self-driving car than with humans trying to drive in traffic, because humans are notoriously terrible at driving. So that's one benefits to me. And I don't even drive in traffic. I'm thinking about the rest of the world.
Right. No, and everyone thinks they're a great driver, and everyone
you're
else
not.
Is a jerk on the road.
You are not a good driver.
But when everyone thinks that, and you know, that's what happens when you get trapped, because everyone thinks they're better than this guy, and like, hey, let me into that space, and it's just a big mess that just having a bunch of, you know, computers in control, as scary as it may sound to some folks, where there's just math guiding these things. I mean, to me, the benefits are there. You don't have to convince me. That seems great to me. Sort of government regulators and things, how exactly that works out on paper is for other folks to decide, but I don't need to be sold. It seems pretty great already, the idea of it.
So we got an email from Kyle here. We've talked about this many times, but 3D and 4K seems to me 3D is pretty much dead. And my guess would be that as the price of 4K drops, it will just inevitably replace the current HD. Is that kind of how you see it?
Yeah, no, 3D is no longer like a marketing or a selling feature. I would imagine that I think most new TVs just have it as, you know, you push a button and it's there. It's not really something they're marketing or selling or promoting as much as they used to a couple of years ago. And, yeah, 4K TVs, they're definitely on the market. I actually bought a TV a couple months ago. Not a 4K. They're still a little expensive. But all the big manufacturers have them. Samsung has one. Sony has one. They're still a couple $1,000s. But I would say, honestly, within maybe, you know, 3 or 4 years, they'll be down to the price where, you know, the sort of average person, when you buy your TV, you know, once, you know, how often do you buy a TV? Once every 10 years, maybe. They're not something you buy like a phone every year, every 2 years. So it's more of a long-term purchase. But yeah, I would be fairly confident that if you're going to buy a TV within the next 3-4 years, it's probably going to be a 4K TV, or at the very least, you'll have an affordable option to do so. One of the problems, or maybe problem you would say, is that there's not a whole lot of 4K content out there.
Yeah.
So you buy this TV. It was the same thing that happened during the sort of HD transition a couple years ago in the mid 2000s, where you buy this shiny new TV, and the only thing you can watch is nature documentaries in HD, and those are cool, and those are great, and those are a great sort of way to, like, hey, you know, show your friends and impress them. But you know, if the big game is not in HD, It's sort of, you know, what's the point kind of thing. But services like Netflix, they shot House of Cards in 4K. And so that's available on Netflix via, I think it's only via specific model 4K TVs. You can get Netflix in 4K. And I know Samsung said, it was either yesterday or the day before, that they're going to be working with Netflix and Amazon to sort of stream 4K content from there. So it's, the early delivery mechanism appears to be internet streaming, which sort of goes to our early discussion, is, you know, the broadband and cable cutters and so forth. There's no optical format. Blu-ray is not big enough to hold, you know, a 4K length movie. They're giant files. It's, you know, four times the resolution of 1080p. So streaming seems to be the way to go so far. It's just not a whole lot of content out there. A couple Netflix shows, but. You know, as shows, you know, are filmed in 4K and so forth, it'll get better. But it's at any rate, they're a little expensive today. 3-4 years, they'll be low enough where you can get it, and hopefully 3-4 years from now, you know, we'll start seeing things that people actually want to see, like sports. I know they experimented with the World Cup a couple months ago. Some of that was shot in 4K, and they had sort of screening parties in Brazil or whatever. So we're getting there. It just takes time.
I guess I think I might have asked this last time, but I don't know if you're aware of the answer to this or not. But I mean, is there a upper limit to the K that we could rise to, in the sense that if you get to like 8K or 12K, I mean, where's the line where don't bother? You know what I mean? Like, no one's going to it would be impossible for a human being to tell the difference.
Right. I believe we spoke about this one of the previous times, and the answer is, I know they are working on 8K, so that is definitely the next step, and that is in development. That's obviously down the line. But I guess the question is, what is sort of the limit that the human eye can see?
Sure.
There's only, the resolution can only be so high before it's something that the human eye cannot appreciate. You can do other things, like you could increase the frame rate, the frame rate to improve the smoothness, if you will, of the image. You could improve the sort of the color space, if the colors are more realistic. But often I don't know the exact sort of resolution limit that the eye can see at a regular distance. But I do know that 8K is in development. So sort of a semi-answer to your question.
Two more here. Amazon and Twitch. What's up with this?
Amazon said, I think it was Monday, so a couple days ago, that they bought Twitch, or they have agreed to buy Twitch, for $970 million cash. Twitch is a live streaming service that came out in 2011. Basically, it lets people live stream themselves playing video games. And so you log into the website and you can watch folks playing games. Like a big game right now is called League of Legends. It's a multiplayer game. StarCraft, Diablo, all the sort of big PC games. And you watch people play. And on the sound of it, it's like, well, why would you watch someone play a game when you can just play it? It's like, well, you could make the same argument. Why would you watch a baseball game on TV when you can just play baseball? It's the sort of the appreciation, the excitement of watching these skilled players, excel at their craft. And, they give tips and some of them are funny and some, the whole sort of internet culture behind it. So that's what happened there. Amazon bought it. There had been rumors that Google was going to buy it for around the same price. And for whatever reason, that didn't work out. It's basically Amazon's next step. They're sort of like Netflix. They're sort of dipping their toe into original programming. They actually film one of their shows, Alpha House, in my neighborhood in New York. I hear all the time.
Wow!
So it's part of their big push to create internet content, so you can visit Amazon and buy stuff from Amazon. So it's basically Amazon's next step into being, one of those like vital companies in your life. Going to what we were talking about earlier, it's just part of their, they want to become important to you, and this is another step to being that. So.
Now, the last thing here, just you personally, you're 28, correct?
Yes.
I'm 39, and I try to keep up with all of these technological changes, but things change quick, and sometimes, something will come up, and it's just like, okay, now I feel like I'm getting behind. for example, everybody's on Twitter. And then, like, the kids got off Twitter, and then they were on Instagram, and then they're off Instagram and on to Snapchat. And Snapchat was the one where I was like, okay, what the hell is a Snapchat? And now we're like, now I'm out of my league here.
Sure.
Do you ever feel, as a tech writer, are there things coming up that you, even you personally, are like, okay, I guess I got to cover this for my job, but, like, I'm just totally not in this new thing right here. This is just, like, weird. Is there anything like that kind of sticks out to you?
It doesn't happen every day, but it's definitely something I think about now more than I did, let's say 5 years ago. I would say sort of, one of the big things that actually, Business Week this week has a big cover story on YouTube, the rise of like the YouTube, personality where they have the little show a lot of those YouTube shows to me, I just don't get. I have a younger brother who's 18. And he loves those things. Like, I just think that they're so obnoxious and just so silly. Like, I cannot sit down and watch that type of stuff. Is that because I'm too old? Is that just because I'm, I'm too much of a snob to sit down? I don't know. That's definitely one of them that I sort of think about every now and then. Like, I just don't get a lot of these shows. I don't know, why would you watch that?
Yeah.
I have so many hours in the day, I don't know that I want to spend any percentage of that watching these stuff. Some of it's great, but a lot of it I just don't get. Snapchat was another one too, where I think Snapchat came along maybe just after I had gotten out of college, and I'm sort of not in the – I'm no longer the target demographic, I don't think, for Snapchat. I think
No.
Once you're pushing 30, I don't think you're really in the business of sending, photos, salacious photos or what have you. So I think that's one of those. That's an app that I think is not quite. I'm not quite in the demographic of that anymore. Obviously, it's a great service. They've built a great company, but I don't know that I'm their target customer, and that's okay. So those are the two things I could say off the top of my head. A lot of those YouTube shows, and I think of the sort of big messaging companies, big Snapchat is just I'm just not that target demo. And that's okay. I don't have to be everyone's target demo.
That's right. It's very important to grow up, but it's very tough to not get old. You know what I mean? That's what I'm...
You gotta embrace.
Yeah, but still, you don't want to... I don't want to be that guy that's still trying to use his I don't know what... I don't want to insult anybody here, but if you're still stuck using Windows 97, I mean, come on, get with the program here. It's 2014. Right. Let's talk about Circa. Let's plug the service. I love Circa.
Yes, Circa is a news startup. It is based in San Francisco, and I am here in New York City. I am the lead technology editor at Circa. Basically, Circa is gimmick, if you will. The point of Circa is to sort of distill the day's news events into a handy little format that you can read on your phone. The point is that the average person doesn't necessarily have the time to sit there and read the New York Times in the morning or you know, pick your favorite news source when you really only just want sort of just give me the gist of what's going on, and that's sufficient for my life. And part of the beauty of Circa is that if you see a story that you're interested in, if you're into Xbox, if you're into PlayStation, if you're into the Apple event that's happening in a couple weeks, you can click follow on it. And every time that we go in there and we update that, let's say the Apple story, you can configure it if you want to get a push notification to your phone to say, hey, there's been an update to the Apple story. You tap here to read it, and we'll give you the most up-to-date news as it happens. We've got a really great team of a bunch of folks. It's sort of split between San Francisco and New York. And we actually have a new version coming out in the next couple weeks, I would say. We're sort of internally testing the alphas right now for Circa version 3. So that'll be coming within a couple weeks. And it's they've just done such a great job. The new UI is like so – it's just so – it's good. Obviously, I work there, so it should be expected to think that it's good. But it's actually really good. Yeah, that's it. It's basically, if you're into news, and that's the beauty of it, too. It's like, if you're not into news, you don't have to sit there and, like, troll Twitter all day to keep up to this. You don't have to glued to your Facebook feed. It just sort of makes it a little bit easier to stay on top of the world events. And you can, if you're only into business news, you can read the business news. If you're only into politics, you can just choose to read the politics. So we sort of leave it up to you as to what you're into and follow your interests type of thing. That's about it. I do all the tech stuff. So if you see a tech story there, there's a very good chance that I'm the one behind that. So.
Now, I don't want to put you on the spot, and it's very possible I'm out of the loop, but is there an iPad version of Circa? Because I think I've got the iPhone version of it on my iPad.
I would say that that's probably something in development. I don't know. I've probably already given it away. But I think it's safe to say that that's something that they are considering. Right now, it's for iPhone and Android smartphones.
Sure.
And I'll say, don't be surprised if in the future you see it on the iPad. Exactly when, I couldn't say, but, maybe one day.
Sure, yeah. The iPhone version works great on the iPad. It's just everything's a little bigger. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so. It's one of the things that, you need to take. If you want an app on the iPad, you really owe it to your users to sort of sit there and make it specifically for the iPad.
Yes.
So, don't be surprised if you see that one of these days.
But I mean, in your defense, the way that Circa is designed, I mean, it is designed for a phone. Here's the news. It's hard to explain. You'd have to use it, everybody. It's Circa in the App Store. But the stories are. I mean, not only are they short to the point, but they're split up into chunks. And so you essentially will, as you scroll up, you'll see one chunk highlighted at a time. And I don't know who came up with this idea, but it's pretty brilliant because it forces you to read the story in chunks, which at least to me increases the readability of it dramatically. So I'm not just saying this because Nicholas is here on the show, but I do love that app, and it's pretty much the only app that I go to for news. So. Check out Circa.
It's funny. I was a user long before, several months before they even approached me to join the team. And yeah, it's just a really well put together app, and just happy to be part of the team. So go download Circa, folks.
That's right. CIRCA is the, and I guess on the web it's CIR.ca, which is very clever. So you can head up there and get some information. But Nicholas, I want to thank you so much for doing the show today. We do these, it seems to be about quarterly now, which I love because things change quickly in tech. And every 2 or 3 months is great to do another one. So thanks again. And if you've got anything else, you're welcome to get that out there right now. Otherwise, thank you.
No, just check out Circa, and I'll speak to you soon, Brian.
All right, sweet. And of course, thanks, everybody. We'll be back in just a moment with more here on After Dark Radio on the Dark Matter Radio Network. Hey, everybody, back here on the show. Brian Alvarez here, After Dark Radio, Dark Matter Radio Network, here live every Friday night, 11 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 2 a.m. Eastern. Replaying all day on the Dark Matter Radio Network on Saturday. You can check us out there. That was Nicholas DeLeon of Circa, talking technology and such, and our illustrious webmaster, Keith Rowland, has sent me a link. There is a Chromebook available, $179. What could be better than that? $179. I'm telling you, if I did not have to do this show, I would be living my life in the cloud. Have a Chromebook, Dropbox, Terabit for $9.99. What else do you need? All of your word processing, Excel spreadsheets, everything is up there on Google Drive. Email through Gmail, a wonderful world that we live in. So anyway, we are here on the show and we'll be taking your phone calls for the duration. Phone numbers, 855-478-4478. That is toll free in the United States and Canada, 855-478-4478. West of the Rockies, 425-488-0525. That is 425-488-0525. East of the Rockies, 425-482-1686. That is 425-482-1686. You can check all of this out on AfterDarkRadioShow.com. All of the phone numbers are up there. You can send us an email, Brian@WrestlingObserver.com. Make sure you have After Dark in the subject line. And of course, if you'd like to contact us on Twitter, you're welcome to do that as well. My Twitter handle, @BrianAlvarez. So contact the show, everybody. As noted, the phone lines are open. If you are listening and you've got anything you'd like to talk about regarding anything we've been discussing on the program today, technology, all sorts of topics here today. The idea that scientists are learning to read minds. What do you think of the idea that you'll be able to send an email via your mind? What exactly would that mean? Let's think about this for a second. How many times have you written an email and you've written the email and then you've read it over and you've decided, I'm not going to say that. I will write this instead. And you redo your email. Or maybe you're very upset at something. Your boss upset you, and so you decide you're going to write him a nasty email. And then you write the email, and you think, maybe I'm not going to write this email. And you rewrite it, maybe say something a little nicer. Well, imagine if you sent emails by thinking. And unfortunately, whatever pops into your head that's going to the other side could lead to some awkward situations. Maybe you said something that you didn't mean to say. Maybe you're emailing somebody and you thought something that perhaps you would not want them to know that you thought about, but it's too late. The email has been sent. So I guess we can discuss that if you would like to. Also here, Google, since we've been talking technology, this here from news.discovery.com. Google aims to archive all human knowledge. New research details emerging this week suggest Google is after the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. What does that mean? We'll talk about it after this next call. You are on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from?
Hey, yo. This is George calling from New Jersey.
George, what's up?
How you doing? Hey, you know, kind of related to the thing you talk about reading minds and a lot of stuff, the mind control. I've been experimenting with these things called binaural beats when I go to sleep. And I was wondering if, I mean, you know, eventually they'll probably have something, some sort of machine or some sort of chemical or something that'll directly affect the way you dream and the way you sleep. And I was wondering, you know, what you would think about that and the possibilities of something like that.
Tell me more first about your binaural beats experiments. What are you attempting to do here?
I don't know. Well, I have trouble sleeping a lot of times. That's why I'm off listening to the show. But so I have trouble sleeping. So I've tried different things. You know, I've tried natural sleep aids, and I've tried, you know, chamomile tea. And I found this thing called binaural beats on, you know, you can look them up on YouTube. And basically, you play them, and it's kind of like these sounds. It's like, you know, something you listen to while you're meditating or something like that. And it's supposed to help you sleep, and they have ones that help you, you know, have lucid dreams and where you can control your dreams and things of that nature.
And how has it worked out for you?
I think it's helped out. You know, they have different ones, so I'm always trying different sounds and stuff. But I mean, in the beginning, I felt like it was working in terms of just like putting me kind of in this trance, and then like letting my my mind take control of, you know, how I'm gonna dream. But there's to lucid dream, there's a whole lot of steps that you have to take to really master it.
Sure. I'm reading this right here, talking about binaural beats. It says may provide other health benefits such as control over pain. So essentially, what you're asking is there a concern over perhaps using something like this to mind control? Is that kind of it?
Well, I'm just thinking of the possibilities of a chemical or some sort of machine or something that'll eventually be available for people to more readily access this. You know what I'm talking about?
I see. So this would be a benign thing. So you would use it the way that you're experimenting with these beats. You're not talking about, like, you know, the government is going to use this to cause you to do something you don't want to do.
No, I don't think that. I mean, hey, it's possible, and there's theories on them using sounds like that, but I don't think it's a concern of mine directly.
Yeah, I think that, you know, if something like this were, I mean, people have always used, you know, you go to bed and they play the sound of the ocean or whatever, and a lot of people right. find that very relaxing. But, you know, I don't know what it is about the sound of the ocean. You know, is it the sound of the ocean? Is it certain frequencies that come up when you play the sounds of the ocean? It sounds here like what this is trying to find certain frequencies that will relax you, for example, like you said.
Right.
So, yeah. I think that if it works, I think that it will be used by more people. But it seems kind of like a thing now that's pretty... few people know about it, I guess would be the best way to put it.
Yeah, and no, actually, you know what I tried recently too, like, you know, like you were talking about how they have the sounds of the oceans. They have one where you hear like all the sounds of outer space.
Yes. Which
have you heard that?
I haven't. What sounds are in outer space?
It's kind of like those binaural beats in the sense that you just kind of hear a lot of different frequencies, but they have ones where you can hear stuff on the moon and stuff that vibrates off like the rings of Saturn and things of that nature.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, I don't play any sounds when I go to sleep, but I've occasionally like left my window open because it's kind of relaxing to listen to outside when you're trying to go to sleep. I don't live by a freeway or anything like that, but I have found that I will often wake up very, very easily when I hear anything weird out there. So, yeah, it doesn't work the best for me. I actually sleep with those earplugs in to just have complete silence. That's what helps me.
Oh, interesting.
So maybe I'll have to try some of these beats.
Yeah, I mean, even I think like if you when you're training or something like that, I think they have different ones that help you out in that sense. And, you know, it's like they have one space for meditation stuff, so you don't necessarily have to use it for sleep.
Sure.
But the sound one, the outer space one, would just, I think you'd like it just for the fact that you get to hear what's that going out in outer space.
Sure. Well, I want to thank you very much for the call. I will check this out and maybe we'll do a show on it of some sort. I'm looking at the various frequencies here. This here says at under 40 hertz, gamma waves, higher, usually associated with higher mental activity, problem solving, fear, and consciousness. They're the beta waves for active, busy, or anxious thinking. Alpha waves for relaxation while awake, as well as REM sleep and dreams. So I presume that's what he's doing there. Theta waves, deep meditation and relaxation. And then delta waves, deep dreamless sleep and loss of body awareness. Not sure I'm down with that one right there. I do not want to lose awareness of my body. Let's talk about this. Actually, let me look at Twitter here. Sammy says, regarding the 4K TVs, he says, about our eyes and resolution, it all depends on the screen size and the viewing distance. He believes 8K TVs would be horribly stupid. I guess meaning that nobody would be able to tell any difference, he doesn't think. Shows when different resolutions matter, helpful when purchasing a... I see here. He's sent me a link regarding resolution when it matters. Back to Google here. According to an intriguing report in New Scientist, Google is building a next-generation information database called Knowledge Vault that is designed to index and store what we can reasonably term facts, and not just some facts. The vault is intended to continually catalog and store all facts about our world and its history. It's certainly an ambitious plan, likely beyond the capability of even the largest crowdsourcing initiative. But that is all right, because Knowledge Vault is fully automated and uses algorithms to turn raw data gathered online into bite-sized, usable chunks of knowledge. What's more, because of the nature of the knowledge base, the information will be readable by both machines and humans. You could query Knowledge Vault directly, as with a Google search, or you could rely on a future smartphone or a digital assistant or a robotic helper to do the searching for you. The Vault project is building upon Google's existing crowdsourced database, Knowledge Graph, and so far has cataloged 1.6 million facts. Google researchers will present a paper on Knowledge Vault next week at the Conference on Knowledge Discovery and Data Mining. It is part of a larger initiative in the information tech area to improve the manner in which we interact with machines and databases. Similar knowledge bases are being built by companies like Facebook, Amazon, and Microsoft, and IBM. One of the first practical applications for these ultra database systems is to create a new generation of virtual personal assistants. In other words, Siri is about to get much smarter and faster. So there you go. Turning all history into data and prophesying the future. It says here, Google does not monkey around. That from news.discovery.com. So you can check that out. Eric's always got these interesting questions here. Eric is here on Twitter. If you had to explain that time is something physical we can hold, how would you explain time? You're asking the wrong dude. I don't even understand the question, much less I can provide an answer. If you've got some extra money lying around, have I got something for you? It says the famous Eric Shipton photographs of alleged Himalayan Yeti footprints are expected to fetch up to 5,000 pounds. You can Google these. Just Google Eric Shipton Yeti. You'll see the photographs. The images were taken in 1951 during an expedition in which the British explorer had been trekking at an altitude of 19,000 feet across the Himalayas in an attempt to climb Mount Everest. The prints themselves, which measured around 13 inches, which are small, by the way, by Bigfoot standards, but the Yeti, I suppose, is supposed to be smaller. The prints themselves were found imprinted in the snow over a considerable distance. Several pictures were taken, some showing the prints up close, others showing them trailing off eerily across the frozen wastes. The photographs are so iconic, we are hoping they will raise more than 5,000 pounds during the option, or the auction, said James Hislop, who cataloged the pictures for Christie's auctioneers. They are incredibly rare, he says. The photographs are the earliest documentation of the famous Yeti, and the pictures made all of the headlines in the 1950s. So if you'd like to check those out, you can. By the way, if you go to AfterDarkRadioShow.com, you can see this article, and it also has a link to a gallery that is, in fact, showing all of the photographs. And there are a lot of them here, including the very, very famous Yeti footprint, which is sitting there next to a pickaxe to show the size of it. Also photographs of a line of footprints through the snow. 5,000 pounds these are being offered for. So if you've got some money, may want to bid on that one. So there you go. What else have we got here? A study creates a time travel illusion. This is from the BBC. Virtual reality can be used to give the illusion of going back in time, according to an exploratory study. In this virtual world, subjects were able to reduce how many people a gunman killed, an event they had unknowingly been a part of. Going into the past increased the level of guilt the participants felt. That's interesting. Writing in the journal Frontiers in Psychology, the team says that virtual time travel could help people overcome traumatic experiences. So they're going to overcome a traumatic experience but leave with more guilt? Is that right? Most interesting, the researchers said, was the emotional impact virtual time travel had on the participants. The more the participants felt the illusion, the greater the sense of their own morality. It says in the virtual world, participants could walk, talk, and move similar to how they would in real life. And previous selves studies have shown that people strongly associate with their virtual selves. In virtual reality, the brain's low-level perceptual system does not distinguish between the virtual and the real world. The brain takes over and sees and hears in a surrounding environment as given. So what is going on here? In the study, 32 participants witnessed a man open fire and kill five people in an art gallery. They had learned to control a lift, and it allowed the killer to go to the upper level. Half of those went back in time to experience this event once more, but this time were faced with a classic moral dilemma. This, of course, all virtual reality. They could either do nothing and five people would die, or they could intervene and five lives could be saved at the expense of one of them. And the other half simply experienced the same event but were not able to change the earlier actions. Now, the dilemma is commonly used in philosophical studies looking at morality. As expected, most participants chose to intervene. The team said the virtual time travel could help people overcome post-traumatic stress disorders or to reevaluate previous bad decisions. So there you go. Not fully comprehending this particular article right here. There's a lot of the illustrations are all virtual reality as well. So I don't know what's going on. Would you go back in time? I don't understand the point of this besides traumatizing your individuals that are involved in this study. I want to make sure I read this. This is from the Iceland Review. Oh, man, the phone's ringing. Should I take one more before we go? You're on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from?
Oh,
Dave, are you in the middle of a hurricane?
No.
There we go.
I just want to say...
Go ahead.
Yeah, for the record right now, it's a little bit windy outside. I did go out to the bars, but no, I did not have a drink. I entertained my friends for the evening.
Good job.
So, I just want to tell everyone that, yes, I am still in my state of sobriety. The thrill is gone for the most part.
Wow, the thrill is gone.
That's pretty much what it came down to.
Well, what else is on your mind?
I heard that you were talking, like, tonight's subject was future technology.
That's correct.
And you, I'm assuming you have any of your guests on? No?
I had a guest on, yeah, Nicholas De Leon of Circa. Yes.
Okay, I don't know, because usually your interviews go about an hour or so, so I figured maybe I was, when I tuned in, I tuned about 5 minutes ago or so.
Yeah, you missed out.
So I figured, well, I will definitely go back and listen to it. I guess one thing you usually do is you just say, well, I'll definitely have you back on because you're such a great interview. I was just hoping that you would follow up on a lot of your past interviews because you've been doing this for about two or almost 3 years now. And I've really enjoyed a lot of your past guests. And I'm sure you're sincerely mean that you want your guests back because a lot of their interviews are just really great. And obviously there's stuff to expand upon from there.
Who would you like back on?
I just hope
you. Dave.
Off the top of my head, it's not the right now.
Now's not the time. All right, listen.
It's like three in the morning for me.
All right, Dave, okay. I want you to go home and compile a list of guests you want back on, and I will get on it. How about that?
Be careful what you wish for.
I probably should. Better. Hey, listen, I've had Nicholas on like three times now, so he's a very good repeat guest.
Well, I feel like you used him the first two times as a crutch. No offense. He's a good guest, but the first two times it felt like when you were back before the Dark Matter days was like you had no one, so you just kind of called him.
Wow.
It was a good interview.
How insulting to poor Nicholas. I love when he's on. No, I've got so many questions.
I don't want to say I'm insulting him, but as a person who's unfortunately studied broadcast journalism as a career, I'm aware of what crutches are and you kind of go to
wow, Nicholas Daly on a crutch. I'm gravely insulted.
I just want to say, like, he's not necessarily, like, I want you to know what I mean by that. It's just like, you couldn't get anyone else and you knew he was available and you like him as a good guest, so you were able to get him and things panned out well.
Yeah,
so, yeah,
that is correct. It's a great guest. Every 3 months, he's on the show.
I'm just curious. I didn't listen to you, but one thing I'm curious really about is things like smartwatches. I think they're kind of gimmicky, and I don't think they're like the future. So, did he have anything to say about that?
Yes, he did. He said that you and I have the same feeling about these. I think it's a cool idea. But I cannot imagine one that I would wear. When I look at all the mock-ups that people have of a smartwatch, it's like, I would never wear that. It's gaudy. It's ridiculous. And that's kind of his deal is sort of, well, if they announce it, let's wait and see. If anybody can make a simple smartwatch that might catch on, it would probably be Apple. If they do it right, it may catch on. But if they don't, it's probably a dead concept. So we got to wait and see.
Okay, that was one of the things I was really curious about. But as far as Apple, I think Apple is really, like, they're scheduled for a very far downturn within the next decade, just for the fact that Steve Jobs was really their cash cow, regardless of what people thought he was as far as a technology. The thing is, what a lot of people don't realize was that he was not the guy who really developed the initial Apple processor that basically brought the home computer. He was the marketer. He's been able to market things for so long. But, and I don't want to be, you know, just like Debbie Downer, whatever you want to call me, but he's dead. Okay.
Wow. You are a Davy Downer.
And so the thing is, Apple right now, they don't have a marketable guy like that. Right now, everyone is very robotic. They're still living in the shadow of Steve Jobs. That's the black and white. And no one else can sell stuff like Steve Jobs was able to.
Well, hey, you may be right. I don't know. I'd heard that when he passed away, he had like several years worth of ideas left. But after those are gone, who knows? You may be calling the show in 10 years, still sober, I hope, and telling me that you were right.
And you know, that's just what I think. Like I know you're a very pro Apple guy. I'm not a pro Apple guy. I'm not against it, but I find the Windows operating system easier because I'm more accustomed to it. If you want to use it, that's fine. That's basically what I'm cool with. You know, whatever works for a person. But I just don't think that there's no innovation left without Steve Jobs willing to kind of filter it. Like when it comes to wrestling, a lot of people say, well, Vince Russo was a smart guy with a filter of Vince McMahon or whatever you want to simplify it to. I feel that's kind of the same thing. Like, Apple is a great product when you have Steve Jobs to filter out the bad. So that's what I got.
Hey,
so,
you may be right.
Thanks for your call, Brian.
Well, thank you very much for calling here tonight. What a crutch of a call that was right there. But you may be right. We shall see. We'll see what happens at their big event coming up here in a couple of weeks. Very quickly before we go, I've got to read this. A giant sea serpent rumored to inhabit a lake in East Ireland, Iceland, truly exists. And this was announced Saturday by the majority of a 13-person truth commission established by the municipal council of this town in East Iceland, which, no, I'm not going to attempt to pronounce. I can't even begin to, but there was a video here, which you can see if you Google Truth Commission Lake Monster, you can see a video of this. It is a very interesting creature that you can apparently see here underneath the water. And there it is, a Truth Commission in the city. The commission concluded that this was real. What do you think? Check it out, everybody, and maybe we'll talk about this next week on the program. Once again, check it out. It's at IcelandReview.com. You can Google Truth Commission Lake Monster, and it will come up. We are completely out of time. I want to thank everybody for listening today. I had a tremendous time, as always. Again, we are here every Friday night, 11 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 2 a.m. Eastern. You can always check us out on the Dark Matter Radio Network. You can always check out a replay of the show at AfterDarkRadioShow.com. It's going to be up here in about 15 minutes. If you missed any part of this show, AfterDarkRadioShow.com is the place to go for the replay. Check that out. Please support the Dark Matter Radio Network. All sorts of amazing shows airing throughout the week. A lot of them coming up tomorrow as well. So please check those out. Of course, ArtBell.com as well. Big thank you to the illustrious webmaster behind all of this, Keith Rowland, as well as the great Art Bell. And of course, thanks all of you for listening. We'll be back next week with a brand new show. Please enjoy your holiday weekend. Have a fun time. Be safe. We'll talk to you again next week. Brian Alvarez here, After Dark Radio on the Dark Matter Broadcasting Network. Such a winsome love.
as she onward sped.